International detective dragons from outer space.
Hello, and welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 54. The topic for this installment is an extension from episode 53. What painting, photograph, song, character, book, or film most completely describes who you are? In this show, we'll hear from the Encaffeinated One of The Weird Show, Tyson of the Northwest, and Dickie of the Stealth Geek Podcast. So thank you for letting me into your vehicle or home. If you're wearing headphones or earbuds, thank you for letting me inside your brain. I'll try not to make a mess. We'll get started right after this.
Say, what's the lowdown on breakfast at your house? Do you eat the sort of meal that helps start your day in high? Well, here's the dope about as delish a dish as you could wish. One that'll tease your appetite so that you can hardly wait to dig in. It's Kellogg's Pep, the Sunshine Cereal. The light, crisp cereal that's a bright spot at any breakfast table. And when you pour on cool milk and sugar and start to spoon it up, what a come on you get. Your appetite sure wakes up smiling when your spoon comes up rippling with cool, catchy flavor. Yes, sir, you can really latch onto those crisp, tender flakes of Kellogg's Pep. They're solid senders. Make breakfast the kind of meal that you're glad to get up for every morning. Because Pep's a smacking, whacking good. And as you spoon up all that slick Pep flavor, you get the good out of Pep's hearty whole wheat nourishment plus. So eat it all up, gang. Polish off your morning dish of Kellogg's Pep. Clean as a whistle. You know, nowadays, we're sending the cereal grains to help give good nourishment to fellows and girls overseas. Think of that when Mom brings Kellogg's Pep home from the grocer's. You're on the beam if you eat all your Pep. Don't waste it.
As delish a dish as you could wish. He said that with his mouth. I think he also said, did he say polish off your breakfast? Polish off your bowl? I think he said punish. I heard punish. I don't know. Oh, we're screwed up. We're just as screwed up now as we were then. That may sound quaint, but we haven't changed. It's all the same stuff. I don't need to tell you. Hello. Hi. It's episode 54. It's an even episode. Good for me. I'm happier. That's a good thing. I like it. Nice even number. And we're approaching the end of civilization as we know it. I wonder if that's now a required addendum to that sentence. We can't just say we're approaching the end of civilization. We have to add as we know it to the end of that. We can't just say, you know, the end of the world is nigh or any of that stuff anymore, because it's become one of them nooks and crannies things. Like, how often were the words nook and cranny stuck together until people started selling English muffins? It's got to be nooks and crannies now to hold the melted civilization. What other pairs of words are there? There's a whole bunch of pairs of words out there that have to go to... of course, I can't think of any of them now. Through the miracle of editing, I'm going to sound like I'm coming up with this instantly. And it is... Trials and Tribulations. That has to go together. Blazing Inferno. I think that's another one. That's another pair. Not very common, though. Wacky Antics and Hilarious Hijinks. Also not very common, but I've heard it very often. Wholesome Goodness. That's another hackneyed, overused, cliched pair of words. Oh, I bet there's tons more that I'm just leaving out and I've forgotten them. And I managed to derail myself. What was I starting out with? I was starting out with the end of civilization. Why do I think the end of civilization is nigh? Why do I think that I have seen a sign of the breakdown of the cohesiveness of human society, I'll tell you, of course, it's a video. I was looking for a kind of music. It's too long a story to tell you why I was looking for a specific piece of music, but I was. In the course of looking for that, of course, I found something else. And I'm going to embed that video in the Goodikadingadongadoons for episode 54, because you would never believe me. Well, actually, yeah, I guess you would believe me, wouldn't you? Because you know it's true. And this is what it is. It's a video of a rhinoceros in humanoid stand-up form wearing underwear, dancing the flamenco. Now, I don't mean like one of these cartoon rhinos doing a kind of a cheap, hackneyed jig to a popular song, popular current song. No, we're talking a rendered, ray-traced, humanoid rhinoceros with shadows and lighting and motion capture applied smoothly and almost eerie. It's almost eerie how smooth this is. Wearing tidy whiteys. What do they call them? Whitey tighties? Tidy whiteys? Whatever. The opposite of boxer shorts. Which I can't understand at all on a figure like this. It's like, why did you bother? It's just disturbing to see that. It's very disturbing. But I couldn't stop watching it. It was like watching, I don't know. Alright, so anyway, yeah. That things have gotten just a little too bizarre. If at will you can go to a PC and bring up flamenco dancing by a rhinoceros. Smooth, well done flamenco dancing. Professional. With a music background and everything. So you just please, don't take my word for it. Go to the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space page and check that out. I'll have it embedded. I had to get that off my chest. That's what I started with, because that's something that I just had to... I had to get off my chest. Another link. I'm going to throw another link in here. This is one of those links that you are just... You're not going to thank me for this at all. What a time sink this sucker is. Woohoo! Interesting? All right, to me, it's extremely interesting. The site is www.freemoviesandfilms.com. You may have already found this. If you haven't, I'm glad I can share it with you. If you have, then you know what I'm talking about. A long play videos, full-length motion pictures. They actually don't really deserve the title motion pictures. You have to call them movies. I guess the same way you wouldn't call Thunderpants a film. You'd call it a movie. Searching for Bobby Fischer, you'd call that a film. All right, anyway, yes, free movies and films. What can you find there? Vintage cartoons, vintage silent movies, kung fu pictures, Mystery Science Theater 3000. I watched earlier this morning, I watched Rocket Men from the Moon, a la MST3K. Is that what it is? Mystery Science Theater 3? Yeah. Watch that. And there's a couple of other selections. And I believe they're adding to it as they go. Just bring up the page. It'll start you off with a random sampling of what they've got to offer. They've got categories to select on your left-hand side down the column. Fun stuff. Hell of a time waster. I'm so sorry. But I think you'll enjoy it. Anyway. Going down my list here, moving right along, I'm going to reiterate a recommendation because, wow, I just laugh too much when I listen to this show. It's the absolute peach. Telling you again, these guys are just a lot of fun. They're so much fun. Listen to, they've just concluded their second series. They've done their podcast in series. They've done series one. They just concluded series two with their episode 20, Joe's Cuisine. It's another one of those things that can't be described. You have to listen to it in order to get it. And I was laughing out loud. They just make me laugh out loud. These guys are like brothers who are fighting with each other for the fun of it, but they're keeping their voices down because they're afraid they're going to get caught. That's what it sounds like to me. It's kind of like you're in on a sort of a string of secret jokes. But I don't know. It's just incredible fun. Go listen to The Absolute Peach. Wonderful stuff. Now's a good time to catch up because they're going to be, I think, away for a while. I don't know how long, but not too long. They've finished up their second season. What was next on my list? I didn't write these down in any particular order. I just kind of like, you know, I wrote them down so I wouldn't forget them. But I forgot to bring up that whole Toby thing from West Wing. The thing that Sarah sent in, the transcription, she literally transcribed the lines of the character named Toby in West Wing, along with the YouTube link that showed what the actual scene was. Now, I read her transcription in a high-stress treatment of it, as she recommended, And then I went and looked at the video, and I don't know, maybe it's me. I don't see myself too much, or maybe it's a sound thing. Maybe it's just that I don't think I sound that way. He underplayed it. He was far more professional with it and less cartoony, I think, than I was with it. Oh, it's all a question of interpretation, really. I don't know what the context was, but it was still extremely interesting to see. Sarah believes that somehow he sounds like me or I sound like him or one way or another. Sarah, if you've got some more, if you want to try this again with something else that Toby has done, I promise, once again, I won't look at the YouTube thing first. I will do the reading first and then we'll see. But that was a fun experiment. I liked that. Thank you. Folks, check out episode 53 if you don't know what I'm talking about. Next on the list, Bells in the Bat-Free. I've already recommended that podcast. That was discovered and recommended by the Encaffeinated One. It may not be the very last episode, because he's probably come out with another one since I wrote this down. It may be the episode before last, whatever. Check out Bells in the Bat-Free in at least one of them, either the very last one or the one before that. It is introduced by none other than the Encaffeinated One. Way to go. Very slick. That was very fun to hear your voice right at the top of an excellent show like that. So, very cool. Speaking of the Encaffeinated One, I did it again. I was a big weenie again. I sent in my email and I sent it to the wrong address again. I feel like Wile E. Coyote, like, lighting the dynamite that I'm sitting on and chuckling to myself. And the fuse burns and I'm about to get my butt blown off. But yeah, I'm a super genius. I screwed it up again. I'm sorry. I promise next time I will get it right. You know what I'll do? I'll do the shotgun method. I'll send it to as many different possible combinations of getting to the weird show input, feedback, etc. Sorry about that. Okay, what do we got next? What's next on the list? The Encaffeinated One, by the way, is one of the we'll hear from the Encaffeinated One a la audio because he has used the reindeer line again. Good. Thank you. Excellent. Spam. In Gmail. I'm getting spam in my Gmail account. And what's this is what's like confusing me a bit. This is knocking me for a loop just a little bit. Okay. I mean, I'm reading lines like, and I didn't, what I really should have done was taken a photo snap of the subject lines in a series. You know, every other day when I clean these things out, just take a picture of the screen so that I could read it back. But I'm not even going to bother with that because it's too easy, because you've all seen them already. Never be laughed at again because of the size of your D1K. You will never please a woman with a tiny C0K. Fulfill her wildest dreams with your enormous T00L. She will gape in wonder. I don't even have to go on. You've seen them all. You've seen these. All right, fine. They're selling. What are they selling? There's, all right. There's that. There's also the Viagra ads. There's the enlargement method and there's the Viagra ads. All right. What is bothering me is they're doing this, and they've been doing it for a long time because somebody is answering these ads. Somebody by the thousands, by the hundreds, by the tens of thousands, there are men answering these ads. That scares me. Who is answering these ads? Who is that insane? And that's just for the enlargement thing. Let's imagine that you actually were interested in getting hold of Viagra illegally without a doctor's prescription, risking heart failure and all the rest of the whatever goes along with it. Okay. Are you really gonna trust some Asian website that's got a distribution point of some kind in the United States? Are you actually gonna, first of all, give them your credit card information and then put something in your mouth that came in the mail from you don't know where? Who is answering these ads? Who is that? How f***ing stupid. I hope I haven't, I don't know. They gotta be out there. Because the spam just does not stop. What is it? Is it 12-year-olds? Is it teens? Preteen? What? Somebody's spending money on this stuff. Otherwise they wouldn't constantly be churning these things out. There'd be no return on their investment if there weren't thousands upon thousands of, alright, I'm done. It blows my mind. I can't comprehend. I cannot comprehend that level of non-awareness or self-preservation. Have I gone on long enough? I don't know. All right, one more thing. I just got to get into one more thing. I write my representatives occasionally, like, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, and I wanted to get hold of an address again. I went to Senator Lautenberg's website, and I saw this thing. I don't know if it's still up. If it is, I'll link to it in the Gooditongatongatong. I saw this thing that made me stop and think, There's something wrong with this. Not all the information is being presented here, because there's something really seriously wrong with this. And I don't know if it's just me, or they're leaving out a whole hell of a lot of background stuff that I don't know about. But you've got to hear this. This is in the bragging department of Senator Lautenberg, the senator's site. A little blurb that goes along with all the rest of the wonderful, marvelous, terrific things that he's done for the state of New Jersey. Here we go. On Thursday, April 26th, 2007, Senator Lautenberg introduced legislation to prohibit terrorist suspects from purchasing firearms, mirroring an administration plan released yesterday. The bill seeks to close the terror gap in federal gun law by giving the Attorney General the power to block gun sales to terror suspects. Under current federal gun law, there is no provision to deny suspected terrorists from purchasing a firearm. Under the Federal Brady Act, a licensed firearms dealer must request a background check through the Federal Bureau of Investigation, National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, before an unlicensed individual may purchase a weapon. However, even if an NICS check reveals that the prospective purchaser is a known or suspected terrorist, nothing in current law prevents that person from purchasing a gun unless he or she meets one of the other disqualifying factors, including felony or domestic abuse convictions. That's Thursday, April 26, 2007. Is it me? Or is there something completely, outrageously, stupidly crazy about that? I'm sorry. There's got to be something that I don't know here. There's nothing in the gun law. There's nothing specifically written into the gun law, the federal gun law, that says a terrorist or suspected terrorist, where is it? Here we go, purchaser, is a known or suspected terrorist. Nothing in current law prevents that person from purchasing a gun unless he or she... Why is a suspected or known terrorist walking around on the street and into a gun shop attempting to purchase a gun? Walking around on the street. This NICS check, first of all, National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, they love their little acronyms. It's like, it reminds me of, what the hell is it? The Blues Brothers. It reminds me of the Blues Brothers. Where Elwood's got to hand over his driver's license to the cop because he was speeding. And he said, oh no, those guys have got SCMADs. What? SCMADs. State and County Municipal Offender Data System. I don't know whether that was ever a real thing or if it was just something they stuck in the movie because a computerized database type thing was hot spit back in those days. Yes, I saw the Blues Brothers in the movie theaters. That's how old I am. All right, fine. All right, if there's something like that, if this NICS thing has information, then, and it comes back to the gun store owner that, there's nothing in the law, there's nothing in the federal law that prevents this person from buying a gun, but just so you know, he or she is a suspected terrorist or a known terrorist. Just so you know. Or they might not even tell them that. If the information is there, I don't know. I don't know. Is a terrorist actually going to try to make a purchase of a gun through a gun store, through a reputable means, through a regular method? Here, I'll give you my name and address, and this is where I live, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, you can give a pseudonym, but the pseudonym isn't going to work on a background check. Or maybe it will. Who the hell knows? I'm sorry. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's me. That just sounds stupid as hell. It sounds stupid as hell. No, you don't give a, you don't sell, give, trade, whatever, a gun to a suspected or known terrorist if you have any frickin' idea in the world that that's who this person is. Now, of course, you can get into the whole political thing about, well, who's a terrorist? How do you define who a terrorist is? There's that whole business about what was going on with the cold medicine. Supposedly, terrorists were funding their activities by buying incredible amounts of allergy medicine because of some ingredient in it. They were distilling it down into amphetamines or narcotics of some kind, whatever. Now, if your grandma goes to the drugstore and picks up, an effective cold medicine, she's got to show ID because that's a suspected terrorist activity. So, I guess your grandma can't go to the gun store now, because she bought some Dristan caplets a couple of months ago, and the FBI has that on record. Who's a terrorist? Common sense is gone. Look at the rhino. I don't know. Who would think of doing that? I'm not disappointed. I think it's really very cool that somebody decided that a green rhino, a super realistic motion captured smooth dancing flamenco rhino in white underwear, should be displayed on the internet because it's, for whatever reason, I guess for people that want to study flamenco and learn how to dance it, watch the rhino. Here's lesson one. Don't worry if you have five fingers on the end of your hands. It's not important. The rhino is just doing the basics. There's nothing in the federal gun law that says a rhino can't buy a gun either. So if this, you know, flamenco dancing rhino in white underwear came into the gun store and decided, hey, I'd like a phased plasma rifle in the 40 watt range. Gun guy behind the counter can't say, sorry, I'll do a background check, but I can see you're a rhino and, you know, in your underwear, which could get you arrested for any number of other reasons, but, I wouldn't be hopeful. Come back in 3 days. Alright. Let's go to a break, and then after the break, let's get into some audio that makes a hell of a lot more sense of what I've been drooling on about. And that would be the reindeer line as used by the encaffeinated one responding to this show's topic. Back in a bit.
The tale Blood Not Told was of India in 1902, from the year of the same name.
Yes. I was fresh out of Sandhurst, and it wasn't long before I joined the army. It was a proud moment when my batman served those two gleaming pips under the seat of my trousers.
I see you worked your way up from the bottom, sir. Congratulations on you becoming a second lieutenant.
Yes. To think, just a month ago, I was only a brigadier. Now let me view myself in the commissioned ranks only mirror.
Oh, he's never done that before, sir.
Well, I'll make damn sure he doesn't do it again. Take it out and shoot it. Oh, Daddy. How I look forward to a day on the battlefield.
And so, let's move right along and get started with the actual show, which is Listener Input, and the first piece is an audio from the Encaffeinated One, who has called in on the reindeer line, I recommend that you all follow his example. All right. However many of you practically can. It's area code 206-350-7809. And here's what the encapsulated one had to say.
Hey, Adam 5, this is the Encaffeinated once again, tempting fate by calling twice into the reindeer line. This time, I'm calling immediately after having listened to the episode, the first moment I have to actually call, so that my thoughts may be fresh, and that I might actually remember to send them this time. You've been asking about, essentially, can you squeeze your identity down to something that might be seen in a painting, a song, a photo? Well, I don't know much for paintings. I know what I like, but I really could identify one from another. Songs, well, that's kind of the opposite. I know I like too many songs. I don't think I could pick one right off the top of my head, or even after several days of thinking. Photos, see, I'm always drawn to photos of large open spaces, shrouded in mist, with mysteries to be told and things to be discovered. Somehow that always seems to me to be quite intriguing. That might reflect my personality to some degree. But I can tell you a couple of things if I wanted to talk about my own identity. One, I've always identified with the character of Cyrano de Bergerac. I don't exactly know why. Perhaps it's one of those inferiority complex things. Always being the nice guy and finishing last, never actually ending up winning the prize, you might say. Or maybe I just romanticize the tragedy that is my own life. Not that it's terribly tragic, just that, well, I'm a typical geek. Anyway, the other thing that I can tell you about my identity is something I had to sum up recently. There has been a phenomenon called the six-word memoir going around. Instead of books published these days, apparently, imagine that, an entire book published of six-word sentences. Anyway, someone on Twitter asked me once, or asked everybody in the Twitter audience, what would be yours? I thought about it for a little while, and this is the six words that I came up with that I think describes me probably the best. And they are, off the mainstream, on my mind. Take that as you will. Good show. I may comment further. You never know, this whole calling in thing is kind of intriguing. It's like doing my podcast without a net. It's like recording, but not recording. I mean, planned. Not that I generally had it planned anyway. I'm just wandering way off topic. On my own long distance. Anyway, catch you later. Bye now.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Encaffeinated One. Sorry I screwed up on my input to the Weird Show yet again. I have no excuse. Cyrano de Bergerac. I saw a televised production of Cyrano de Bergerac, starring Peter Donat, Marcia Mason, and Mark Singer. Peter Donat played Cyrano, Marcia Mason was Roxanne, and Mark Singer was Christian. And it came out in 1972, and I was 12 years old. And boy, did I identify and latch onto the character of Cyrano. As a piece of theater, as a piece of drama, it's not, by any stretch of the imagination, an actor-proof piece of work. You not only have to have supremely competent and skilled performers to pull this off, but you have to have brave performers. Because it's, depending on what translation you're going with, it's going to be over the top. It has to be over the top in order to work. And there's a very fine line to step over between over the top and comedic. But I would highly recommend that particular, it's available actually on DVD and VHS to anybody that's interested in seeing a really good performance of Cyrano de Bergerac. Believe it or not, Mark Singer does, well, I don't know, why should I diss Mark Singer? I don't know anything about him other than Beastmaster and his portrayal of Christian in Cyrano de Bergerac. Loved it. Excellent piece of work. the supreme individualist, the character with the fatal flaw. Talk about a universal human condition. I think everybody, if they don't have, they believe they have some fatal flaw that holds them back. Man versus himself, a romance in which man versus himself. And you could argue the point by the end of it, who wins? Has he defeated himself? And was it a victory worth winning? Because it doesn't exactly result in anyone being particularly happy. It's a real tragedy. When it's played correctly, it's a real tragedy. Of course, there are comic elements in it, and he's a larger-than-life character, but it's just one of the most heartbreaking pieces of work in literature and in theater. Just, sorry, I mean, just mentioning it in the audio there, that just set me off. There's a surprising moment. Now we're getting away from Cyrano de Bergerac. I'm recalling another film entirely that you will not guess in a million years. Not in a million years will you guess what film I'm thinking of. All right, maybe that's a long time. If you can remember every film you ever saw and just run down the list, of course, it would be far less than a million years. Believe it or not, one of the most compelling moments in cinematic history is actually in The Neverending Story. Am I a total sap for bringing this up? Probably. Yeah, it's a goofy film. It's a juvenile film. It's not exactly your special effects masterpiece of the age, but it's a very, very interesting premise, and I think it was carried out with enough skill to entertain me thoroughly. And the moment that I'm referring to, this is another one of those situations where it's the protagonist versus himself. The moment is at the very end, or very near to the very end, and the most emotionally charged line, and the one that always hits me right in the chest with the proverbial arrow, is when the princess, alone in the dark as the world of imagination is disintegrating around her, is screaming in tears to Bastion, saying, "Bastion, why can't you do what you dream?" Everything that leads up to that, everything in the film leading up to that line, whether you consider it well done or not, or whether you consider it corny, hokey, stupid, and kid fluff or not, is like a capacitor for the release of that one line. Watch it again. You'll see what I mean. All right. I think we're gonna go to another break. Thank you extremely much, Encaffeinated One, for using the reindeer line, calling in, and weighing in on this particular topic. Excellent. When we return, who will we hear from? We will hear an email from a new listener, I think, either that or an old listener that hasn't written in yet, or someone we've already heard from, and I'm just too stupid to know who it is, but I don't recall getting an email from Tyson of the Northwest. So thank you. Thank you very much. I absolutely would encourage everyone to follow Tyson's example, and if you haven't written in yet, dash off a note. Back in a bit.
The regiment's sailing tonight for active service.
Active service? Does that mean fighting?
Yes.
Oh, my leg! My leg, it's gone.
Quick, utter it.
In a few bounds, Nigel Sponley had the leg cut for the throat and returned it to me. But it was a close thing.
Damn close.
Oh,
pardon me, Lieutenant, son. Sir, the CO wants to see you in his dressing gown.
Right. I'll change at once.
Next up, as promised, an email from Tyson. The subject line is, "Hello, and a potential explanation." And Tyson writes, "This was recovered at great cost. Many Bothans died retrieving this transcript from the secret volcano lair of International Hacker."
Curses. Anum 5 has added a capture to his forums in a foolish attempt to keep my spam bots out. His picture containing words has foiled my schemes once again.
Master, 5 more porn sites have hired us to manage their logins and security.
Excellent. My empire grows. Ah, I have it. I will craft a program where people log into our porn sites that will go to Anum 5's forums and create an account. When presented with the capture image, it will show the image to the poor slob trying to get his rocks off. Let him solve it and pass the solution back to the forums. If it works, I'll have another bot in the forums of the IDDFOS.
Yes, Master. It is perfect.
Soon I will have my vengeance on the international detective dragons from outer space. Soon they will feel my wrath.
I hope it explains a bit better how the spam bots keep slipping in. Be seeing you. Tyson in the Northwest.
Thank you very much, Tyson. Obviously, this is someone that is familiar enough with internet security to respond to my complete befuddlement over the fact... I love drama, by the way. Anybody that wants to send me any kind of a script, you know I'm a ham and a half. Or, as Simon would say, an incurable ham. Or actually, as I would say, an incurable... Never mind. Let's get back to it. Here we go. Excellent. Thank you. He was responding to my complete befuddlement over the fact that a bot of any kind could possibly read a GIF file or a JPEG file that's got bizarre off-kilter lettering on it, the type that everybody's so used to seeing on these supposedly hack-proof, bot-proof entryways. And if it weren't for that modification that the encabinated one found and directed me to, and that I implemented, we'd have spam bots 2 or 3 a day, because they just attack every PHPBBBBB site that they can. So I see. That's how it's done then. That's how it's done. Somebody scripts off some kind of a sign-up thing for human eyes and redirects all the responses. I get it. All right. Excellent. And hello to you, too. Write in again. That was fun. I like doing stuff like that. And thank you very much for the answer. That's another thing. Who are they hoping to get? It's another one of these blanket attacks, one of these vast, cover as many points and appear on as many monitors as possible with this crap. Who is it who actually responds to this stuff? I mean, I don't even open the emails because I'm afraid there's something attached to them that there's, even if it doesn't say. Because you read about some of these scripts where even if they try to put a picture in with their email, it's got something embedded in it that's going to try and screw up your computer. Ah, viruses. Many Bothans died. All right, good deal. I don't think I'm going to go to a break right away. I think we're going to go right into the next email, and that is from Dickie of the Stealth Geek Podcast. The subject line is Liminality and Tunage, a Retrospective. And Dickie writes,
Hi, Adam. I've been remiss in emailing you, so I'm going to cover as much ground as I can. Try to keep up with my disjointed ramblings because I barely can myself. On transitional states, I've been in a period of serious flux lately, as you well know, and it seems that this period in my life has been a myriad of highs and lows. A few of the more recent things that have changed for me is that I am no longer the drummer of Hollywood Swank.
Really? Wow, okay.
I've decided to take a slightly different career path due to my complete disenfranchising. Is that a word? With the working world as I see it. I will be moving from my current digs in the very near future, and quite frankly, I'm happy with the amount of change that's been going on in my life. Sure, it's as stressful as playing Russian roulette with a Gatling gun, but I...
Wow. Holy crap. What a visual. I'm sorry. Let me go back. Here we go.
Sure, it's as stressful as playing Russian roulette with a Gatling gun, but I kind of like it. And to be quite honest, life needs shaking up every once in a while.
I both agree and disagree with you. How do I agree? Other people's lives need shaking up, not mine. All right, that's not true, but I'll continue.
The last time my life took a left turn was about 2 years ago. I dealt with that by getting a tattoo, a couple more piercings, and joining a band. Why? Don't exactly know. I wanted to get a tattoo for a long time, and had spent around 3 years designing one. Anyway, in the aftermath of the events of 2006, I realized something. Life needs change. Life without change isn't life. It's just existing. I decided then that there's never a perfect situation. And if there's something you need to change or want to do, do it. Make change happen before change happens to you.
All right, yeah. How do you argue with truth? I can't argue with truth. I can't argue with wisdom. I can't contradict fact. Well, I can, but I'd look like even more of an idiot than I already am. Isn't that interesting? There's never a perfect situation, and if there's something you need to change or want to do, make change happen. The thing you are afraid to do most is the thing you need to do next. I read that in one of those impulse buy, cash register, bookstore books 30 years ago. All right. There is more, and here it is.
On music and art as descriptors of being. First, I'd like to say that I am probably an appreciator, not necessarily a fan, of almost every kind of music. Pop and most rap notwithstanding, I understand and appreciate the amount of talent it takes to string together notes in an orally appealing fashion. I believe that music is only as good as the emotion behind it, no matter what that is, whether it be anger, love, sorrow, joy, fear, or whatever. If there's no emotion behind it, it means nothing. Hence why pop and rap don't qualify. Cocky, greedy, and vapid are not emotions.
Wow.
There are many songs that describe me in certain points in my life. Sublime, 40 Ounces to Freedom. Nirvana, Stay Away. Offspring, Self-Esteem. And Refused, New Noise. Would be pretty good descriptors of my high school and early college days. But as I got older, I changed a whole hell of a lot between my second and third year of college especially. And now, as I'm into my almost mid-twenties, I feel like the one song that really describes me right now is a tune by a gentleman named Don Ross called Loaded Leather Moonroof. Now, if you check out the song through the links I provided, you'll notice that it's an instrumental. The thing that I feel really describes me in this song is the way the song swells and falls, exactly like how I've been feeling lately. I've included links to all the songs I mentioned, so you'll have a frame of reference. I'm not exactly sure how familiar you are with 90s punk, grunge, and ska.
Not familiar at all. But I certainly will be following these links, which of course will be in the Kudikadingadongadongs.
Since you've expanded this to include characters as well, I think Dewey Finn, played by my celebrity lookalike, Jack Black, in School of Rock, is an exaggerated version of myself. What really struck me about that character is his desire to make it. And beyond that, his overarching desire to play music however he can. As goofy as Jack Black plays his characters, I thought that this one really had something to it. Anyway, I'll be in touch. Sayonara for now. Dickie. P.S. Thanks for playing my new promo on IDDFOS last episode. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. You're most welcome. Both you and Wes have a winning show there in the Stealth Geek, and very glad that there's a new promo out to play. And it's well done. Wow, excellent. What am I remembering most from this letter?
Now, as I'm into my almost mid-20s.
And the fact that it may not seem really young, and depending on your perspective, it's not really young, depending on where you're looking at it from, it is. And the fact that the preceding paragraph, the paragraph that came before...
Life without change isn't life, it's just existing.
It's very encouraging to see that kind of wisdom coming from someone in their almost mid-20s. And I'm going to go ahead and check out those links. And I absolutely appreciate the input on multiple topics here. You've covered transitional states, art as descriptors of being, character and song identification. And I would encourage everyone, I'm certainly going to check him out, I would encourage everyone to check out these YouTube videos that he has provided the links for to get an idea more of what he's talking about. There was something else. There was something else that almost blew right past me, and that is the whole idea of the tattoo. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't want to call a tattoo a work of art that you would associate as something that identifies you. I mean, you'd feel strongly enough about it to have it indelibly etched on your body. I mean, even as a symbol, it has to have some extreme relevance to your identity, obviously, at the time that you're having the tattoo done. That'd be an interesting topic. I don't know that I would call that a topic for an entire show, but I certainly wouldn't turn down anyone's input on that. I'm recalling way back in the beginning of IDDFOS, one of the questions asked, I think it was in the Miracle Show, I'm probably not remembering that right at all, but one of the questions asked was, if you could have, and this goes right back to the Encaffeinated One's audio response. See, now I'm coming up with stuff to respond. let's take it one thing at a time here. One of the things that I mentioned was a t-shirt question. If you were to enter the afterlife and you weren't allowed to speak, but you were allowed to put something on a t-shirt that indicated to the best of your ability who you were, so that anyone looking at or reading your t-shirt could tell just who it is they're dealing with. What sentence, what slogan, what symbol, what picture, what would you put on the t-shirt? This is a variation of that, I guess, along with the whole pick three works of art that you would most identify with or would most tell people what you're all about. The tattoo as a symbol. And the six-word sentence that the Encaffeinated One came up with. Very same thing, very same tie-in. So I would certainly welcome any kind of input from anybody, any listeners, old or new, for either a six-word sentence describing who you are that you could stick on a t-shirt, or If you were to have a tattoo applied to you, I don't have any. I've never gotten any. But if you were, I mean, Dickie spent 3 years designing his. Right off the bat, knowing that you're not going to have it applied to yourself, what would it look like? Or even if you are about to have it applied to yourself, what does it look like? And why did it identify you? I worked with a scenic artist once. Gee, Anim, are you going to talk about theater now? Are you going to mention a theater experience? Big surprise, eh? I worked with a scenic artist who was single-handedly painting our set for Sunday in the Park with George. And her goal was to take the money that she was making for painting that set as a lump sum and going to get a glow-in-the-dark radioactive symbol tattooed on her butt. No, I don't know why. For some reason, she decided to share that with us, with all of us, and we were all kind of okay. Fine. I don't know if she ever actually had that done, but I guess it had a hell of a lot of meaning for her. More recently, one of the carpenters that work at the shop was interested in getting a tattoo, but he wanted to do one. He wanted one done that displayed the fractal spiral of a crop circle that came out 5 or 6 years ago. I guess just because he liked the design, he liked the pattern. Whatever. All right. Excellent. Thank you again. And we're going to go to break now. And when we come back from the break, we will find out what this episode's old-time radio genre nugget is going to be. Back in a bit.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
In the year 1669, the entire village of Brunswick, England, slipped into the sea. Yet not a single inhabitant was drowned. All the residents were attending a funeral in a neighboring village at the time. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the foundling who floated ashore.
Secret reporting, sir.
Come in.
Thank you.
Note your phone number.
Spawn 349, sir.
Spawn 349. Answer that, Seagoon.
Hello, Seagoon here.
Seagoon, come over to my office right away.
Right, sir.
Come in.
Secret reporting, sir.
You're a devilish difficult chap to get hold of.
Yes, sir. I always grease myself as a precaution.
That's a jolly good one, that is. By Jove. Oh, dear. Seagoon, this is Commander Greenslade, R.N.
How do you do?
Seagoon, I have here the editor of the Nathy Quarterly.
How do you do? Gentlemen, I have here in this cardboard suitcase Count Jim Thies Moriarty, confidential bus conductor to the President of France and war correspondent of Health and Sun.
How do you do, gentlemen? I have news. An outpost of the British Empire is in danger.
Tell us something new, mate.
What?
Many strange tales are told of the sea, but one of the most unusual is the foundling who floated ashore from a foundered ship. The infant was discovered in a box on a crude raft as it was washed onto the beach at Provincetown, Massachusetts. He was the only survivor of a ship that sank in a storm. The child was adopted and given the name George Soper. He never learned his true name, the nationality of his parents, or even the name of the ship. Believe it or not.
The The old-time radio show offering for episode 54, he says as he clicks off his headphones and puts them down. Superman, The Adventures of Superman. A brief excerpt, I think it's a minute and 20 seconds, something like that, from the serialized radio program Superman, and the storyline in this one is the mystery of the monkey burglar. Please enjoy.
And now the adventures of Superman. Convinced that Robin is being held by a clever gang of thieves to blind the police to the real identity of the monkey burglar, the daring young acrobat who has been scaling tall apartment buildings and robbing their occupants, Superman and Batman have traced a single clue to a 16-year-old boy named Billy Riggs. Then, following the boy's trail, they tracked him to the home of Spider Gans, a ferret-faced man who runs a gymnasium and who is really the brains behind the monkey burglar's operations. But when they arrived at Spider's home, hopeful of finding Robin there, they found the place empty. Discouraged and worried for the safety of his young companion, Batman turned to Kent and said,
"We're too late, Superman. I'm afraid now we'll never see Robin alive again."
That whole episode, which I don't believe is terribly long, I think it's something like 16 minutes or something, will, of course, as always, be available in the Kudukatingatungatungs for episode 54 as a right-click, save as, download, try it if you like it, old-time radio, genre nugget. Those were fun. A different age, a different attitude. Some of the attitudes were good, some of the attitudes were bad. Some were misguided, some were on the money. Plenty of ideals, a lot of ideals being striven for. Striven, is that a word? Something that the culture would strive toward would somehow be represented in the adventure hero sagas of the old-time radio shows. And if for no other reason, it might be a good idea once in a while to check them out. Now I'm looking at a tabula rasa of audio time between this point and when the closing music comes about, and my face is a rictus of terror because I have nothing to say. I guess the only way to really wrap this up, because of course I have to wrap this up. It's probably going to be a shorter show than normal. Normal? What's normal? If I got back to an hour, that would probably be closer to the length of shows that I used to do for IDDFOS. Getting into the 2.5 to 3 hour length on some of these shows, kind of extreme. It happens sometimes, but I don't think it'll happen this time. Not much more to go into. There may be some value. I mean, I broached the subject partly out of curiosity, partly out of a personal introspection, and that's where the value comes in. Examining your identity, examining who you are, by identifying those things that are outside yourself that you identify with or that describe you. There's lots of different exercises for it. I recall this is probably about as shallow as you can get, but in school, one of the acting professors said, which two actors best describe who you think you are? And what physical object would you say that you are? He described himself as a well-used joystick. Okay, that's how he personally saw himself in terms of an object. I don't remember which two actors he selected. I remember I selected a blending together of Peter O'Toole and Gene Wilder. I don't remember why on that one either. I guess at the time that's who I thought I was, personality-wise anyway. that might have been an interesting thing to add to this question. What object would you say you were? When I was asked to describe the object, I said, well, I'm a pair of antique shutters that, if you open them up, they reveal a mirror. He got me swinging. I have no idea. I said that for, I don't know. I must have had a reason for saying it. I don't know. I'm getting a phrase in my head that keeps boomeranging back. Doesn't make any sense. But I guess if I just say it out loud, then it'll be out there and it can make no sense for anybody else either that hears it. When you identify with things outside yourself, there may be the possibility that it will come back to you and increase your durability of presence. I just heard that in my head a couple of times, and it makes no sense to me. I'll have to think about that, why I even came up with that, where that came from. According to Twain, we're all machines. According to Twain, Mark Twain, in one of his essays, we are all nothing but the result of outside influences. And that every thought we think we've come up with on our own isn't actually our own. But it's the inevitable result of something that came from the outside, whether it was someone else expressing themselves in a work of art, or an image, or a symbol, or a poem, or a film, or a performance, a piece of music. Outside influences that shape the so-called individual we think we are. Very depressing piece, actually, when you read it from front to back. I don't like to dwell on it, and so I won't. Let's cut this one short. Let's just go right to the closing music. I actually do know I know what I'm going to play. I don't know the full pedigree, if you want to call it that. I don't know the full origin of this piece. I downloaded it from the internet almost 8 years ago. I know the name of the piece is Main Street Style, but I don't know where I got it, and I don't know the name of the artist. If someone recognizes it and can tell me, then I can credit the composer, but I'm afraid I'm just going to have to go by title. It's called Main Street Style. It's 2 minutes and 17 seconds or something like that. 2 minutes and 17 seconds. Gee, are you being precise, Adam? Once again, cutting into the music time by just talking about it instead of playing it. So here I am, playing it. Thank you. That piece of music stuck in my head for probably a month after I first downloaded it and listened to it a couple of times. Very viral. Has lots of earworm qualities to it, but I don't know. It grew on me as I was listening to it. I don't get into a lot of electronica, but I don't know. I kind of like that piece. If you didn't, sorry. Glad I put it at the end of the show. While I'm on the subject of music, I would be very, very negligent if I did not acknowledge the background music, the bed music, the underlying stuff you've been listening to throughout most of the show. The composer's name is Hans Christian, and the album is Cinema of Dreams, available at Magnatune. We are not evil. End of the show. Here we are. It's episode 54, and we've already reached the end of it, which is fine. They don't all have to be longer than Gone with the Wind. And I'm so good. And as we have reached the end of episode 54, it was an excellent one. Thanks to the Encaffeinated One, Tyson of the Northwest. I love that. Tyson of the Northwest. I hear French horns in an orchestra playing heroic music when I say it. And, of course, Dickie of the Stealth Geek Podcast. And if you want to hear what kind of music goes with him, well, follow those links. So I thank all three of those listeners, and I thank you for listening to this show. I hope you'll join us for episode 55. That is, of course, the episode in which I will explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.